Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com. Now here are your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
Welcome back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Wendy Williams is an author, but also has a lifetime career in journalism, working first as a reporter for the Daily Newspaper, then as an independent. Her work has been published in a myriad of places, ranging from the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times to Ladies Home and Home Journal and Audubon. As a daily journalist, she has won many awards. Her website is wendywilliamsauthor.com. Welcome to the program, Wendy.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Well, we thank you for taking time out of your day to not only join Holly and myself and educate us, but all of our listeners across the country. We thank you for that.
I'm glad to be here.
So I want to start out with, as a journalist, what inspired you to write books about science and nature? Where was the connection or maybe the disconnect there that brought that avenue to you?
Well, I grew up in the outdoors. As a child, I was outdoors a lot. I had horses and dogs and like to go on long hikes and canoe and things like that. And I've also been interested in science. So as an adult, I became interested in how science can explain to us some of the things that we see in nature that we take for granted. The world all around us is something that we see, but we don't think a lot about it. And that certainly was true with butterflies when I started to research them.
Now, speaking of that, you have a recent book, The Language of Butterflies. What is the book all about, and what can our listeners to expect when they read it?
Well, I started to research a book about conservation success stories. But the first story that I started to research was a project in upstate New York, where a very small but beautiful butterfly had almost become extinct. So I drove up there. I live in Massachusetts on Cape Cod. I drove up there, and the story behind how that butterfly was taken care of, was protected, was quite marvelous. It took them more than two decades to figure out why the butterfly just wasn't increasing in numbers. The more they did to try to help the butterfly, the more the numbers decreased. So they stuck with it, and after two decades, they finally learned that what they needed to do was adopt a whole regimen of burning the entire system in this area. It was a brushy system, and they learned that they needed to burn small parts of that system in order for it to regenerate. And when the entire system regenerated, then the butterflies came back in astonishing numbers. So I decided that the things that I learned there merited an entire book about butterflies, and that's what I ended up doing.
Well, that's interesting. Now, whenever you did the research, what was something that just stuck out to you? You double-checked your facts to make sure that was, like, something that was actually accurate, that you was very amazed by?
You know, the whole book was like that for me. I really have to be honest with you. Butterflies are something that we take for granted, that we see all over the place, and we don't really think about them. I started to learn something about what the scales are like on butterfly wings. As some people know, butterflies and moths are a part of a group of animals that are called Lepidoptera. That's the Latin name for them. And basically that means insects that have scales, because only butterflies and moths have scales. So I started learning about scales. And the first thing I learned was that when scientists or other people work with butterflies, sometimes they have to put a mask over their face because the scales are so small that they can breathe them in and become ill from the scales. The scales can cause asthma. And then recently, with more powerful microscopes, researchers have learned that these scales actually have their own microscopic intricate shapes to them, and that the colors on these scales don't come from pigments. It's not a blue pigment or a green pigment or a red pigment, or in the case of the monarchs, an orange pigment. It comes from the shape of the scales. and the shape of the scales reflects or bends the light in such ways that you see these particular colors. So that I found to be really interesting. But I also found to be interesting the instrument that the butterfly has called the proboscis. It's kind of like their nose. Another proboscis is the elephant's trunk, but of course it's quite different. And recently scientists have learned that the proboscis, which is what the insect uses to get nourishment from flowers, isn't really a drinking straw at all, like most people have thought it was for hundreds, if not thousands of years. It's really more like a blotter. It works, it blots up the nourishment from the flowers the same way that a paper towel might blot up something that you spill in your kitchen. So that was really interesting too. And I was fascinated to learn the whole cycle of monarch butterflies, how they fly all the way down to Mexico. At the end of the book, I went with my husband to go up to the top of the mountain in Mexico where they spend the winter and see that. And that was really quite a thrilling sight. There's just nothing like it that I've ever seen anywhere, and I've spent my entire career writing about nature. It was just beautiful. It's like a stained glass window when they all fly out of those trees like that. So I can't really think of it. It's just one thing that amazed me. I was amazed by everything that I learned.
Well, let's talk about the monarch butterfly, because it's still, it's not as healthy as it once was. There's some still concerned of endangerment issues. And can you elaborate on, they come out of Mexico and they fly up the East Coast, the West Coast, and the central portions of the United States. Different times, is it all one species of monarch, or are there multiple species of that type of butterfly?
That's a good question, actually. There's one species of monarch butterfly, but this one species of monarch butterfly does all kinds of different things. The most common behavior is that the monarchs spread across the United States, all the way up into Canada, across a summer, over a summer, and then at just about this time of year, they begin to migrate south, and they, during the summer, they live independent lives, spread throughout the fields, finding whatever nectar they can. And then about this time, when the angle of light changes, the monarchs start to gather in bigger and bigger groups, and they start to fly south. And as they start to fly south, they start with little streamlets of butterflies flying south, and those streamlets become streams of butterflies, and the streams of butterflies become rivers. And then, by the time they are ready to fly over the Texas border into Mexico, they're really a very thick river of butterflies. They fly all the way down almost to Mexico City, and they turn a sharp right almost. Nobody knows why. But they come out of the valley where Mexico City is, and they start to fly up in the mountains. They get up to the mountains that are somewhere around 10,000 feet high, and they spend the winter there overwintering. It's not really hibernating the way we think of bears hibernating, but they calm down their biological systems so they don't use as much energy, so they don't need to find as much nectar. And they wait there for a couple of months, until there's a right period of cold weather, followed by a good period of warm weather, and until the angle of the sun changes. And then they start their journey all the way back north again. It's really quite an amazing cycle.
I would have to agree. So we are talking with Wendy Williams. She is an author. So you have a few other books that you have written about nature. Could you tell our listeners what those books are and what they're about?
Well, I wrote a book called The Horse, The Epic History of Our Noble Companion. Of course, as a five-year-old, I was fascinated with horses and have spent my life with horses. And I wanted to find out, as I get older, I'm going to be 70 in a couple of weeks, I want to know why do we have all these things on our planet? Why are horses here? Why are butterflies here? Now I'm starting to work on a book about dogs. Where do they come from? Why are they so special to us? So I looked into the whole idea of horses, that they turned out to have evolved here, right here in America. They're a North American product from 56 million years ago. Then they traveled all over the world, and for reasons that no one can quite explain, horses disappeared from the North American plains. They became extinct. And then when Europeans came to the New World, they brought the horses over on the ships. Hard to think of horses traveling on ships that long ago, 400 or so years ago. But they did, and now the horses have returned to the world in which they first appeared 56 million years ago. So I thought that was a great story. And I wrote a story about, I wrote a book about squid because I live near the ocean, not on the ocean, but near the ocean. And we have a common little squid here called loligo, a tiny little thing that people sometimes eat for dinner. But it turns out that that squid has a particular kind of neuron, which is a cell in the brain, that is so large and easy to work with that 100 years ago, scientists used that cell in the loligo squid to study how our brain cells work because we have the same brain cells that squid have. I thought that was a pretty amazing story.
Absolutely. And on the horses there, there are still places in North America and the United States where their horses are wild and running free, just like deer or bear are, which I find fascinating.
Well, we have free roaming horses here, by which I mean that, stockmen or cowboys or ranchers would have put those horses back out on the plains. But what's different about them is that they were once domesticated and have become free roaming now. We don't have any genuinely wild horses left in America. Those genuinely wild horses became extinct before human beings came over from the other half of the planet. So all the horses that we have free roaming here were released by conquistadors, by cowboys, by ranchers, who knows? Maybe some of them escaped. But they really are all stock that came from the stock that was brought over here from Europe.
Always learning something on the show, Holly.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we really appreciate you having you on. Can you tell our listeners how to get a hold of you, how to find your books, how to find your information?
The easiest way to find me is to find me on Facebook, Wendy Williams, obviously. But you can also find my website, Wendy Williams Author. If you put that into Google, my website will turn up. And there's all kinds of information about me and all kinds of information about the books that I wrote.
Well, Wendy, we greatly appreciate you taking time out of your day, not only to educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners from across the country. And we thank you very much for that.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. And when we come back...
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.